It's about mastery of the present moment. If you master that, you master everything.
This is Andy Hart, and you're listening to the Maven Money Podcast. Welcome, wealth builders and shakers. Sit tight, buckle up, as I, the Maven Advisor, take you on a financial journey, ensuring you behave your way to wealth and don't misbehave your way to poverty. Welcome to this week's show. As always, your host, Andy Hart. I hope you had a wonderful Easter weekend. I know I did. Spent the bulk of it in Stratford-upon-Avon in a hotel called the Hallmark Hotel. Absolutely beautiful place, made all the nicer by the wonderful weather we had. Also spent a bit of time in the Fish Hotel in the village of Broadway in the Cotswolds. Absolutely beautiful little town if you wish to visit the Cotswolds. I believe it's in the county of Worcestershire. Lots of feedback from last week's show, property versus investing. We will continue to revisit these two wealth creation heavyweights, so thank you for reaching out. A recommendation. This week's recommendation is a podcast called Swindled. I really like this show. I've listened to them all now. As I say, it's a podcast called Swindled. Being a money professional, scams are something I need to be very much aware of. So the bulk of the podcast talks to you about different scams that people have pulled over the years. As I say, it's called Swindled. I recommend that you check it out. This week's guest is George Kinder. He's internationally recognized as the father of the life planning movement. Harvard educated, he's revolutionized financial advice over the last 30 years by training over 3,000 professionals in 30 countries in the field of financial life planning. I trained with George about 9 years ago. He had a huge impact on my life. He's not your typical guest of the Maven Money podcast, but as we know each other really well, we thought it made sense to have a chat and put it out there. He's promoting his new book, and all will be revealed inside the show. That's it. I give you this week's show, Mr. George Kinder. George Kinder, welcome to the Maven Money podcast. How are you doing?
Good, Andy. Thanks for asking me.
And you're in is it your second home, your third home? It's where'd you put London?
Well, it's not really quite a home, but I spend 2 or 3 months over here every year, and we certainly fantasize about it being our home.
Good stuff. So I first encountered you probably about 10 years ago, and when I went on your 2-day life planning course, and then I loved it so much I went on your 5-day life planning course. That was about 8 years ago, and I was sort of about 29. It's definitely one of the most important courses I've ever been on. So, a personal thank you from me. I remember driving out of Gaunt's house feeling very alive. So, yeah, it's been a very important part of my career.
Fantastic. I think it's one of the most amazing things I created in my professional life.
And tell the listeners what this is. You are known as the father of the life planning movement, but over to you to expand on that.
It's really about making personal finance and our financial life something that is really meaningful, and our relationship with financial advisors something that is extraordinarily trustworthy. So those are really the two areas that I think financial services fell apart in and still falls apart in a lot of ways. It's not to be trusted in many areas, and it's not particularly meaningful. It's more of a sales kind of gimmicky kind of thing. So what I did, I was in that world, and I created, working with my clients, a way of conversing and of sharing that helped the clients to identify what was most profoundly exciting, moving, inspiring for them, and then to move from that to quickly making those things happen in the real world. So we create a powerful vision in the life planning movement for a consumer, a client, and we also have we've trained lots of advisors, but we also have a consumer website where you can do this yourself. But I do recommend an advisor who's been trained to really listen. So we listen well. We set up a relationship that is so profoundly trustworthy that the client is excited and inspired to talk with us about what they really want to accomplish in their life. And then that becomes the focus of the finance, of the money piece.
Just to sort of expand on some of the points you mentioned. So you are an ex-financial advisor, ex-financial planner. So that's important to note. And you set up the Kinder Institute of Life Planning, which is the organization that hosted the courses that I mentioned previously, in around 2003. Is that
about right? About right. Somewhere around there, yeah.
And as you say, you train the professionals in life planning. We get life planned, and then we can then help our clients and consumers with their, you know, financial life planning, et cetera. So you trained about 3,000 professionals, is that about right?
Yes, I think it's over 3,000 and in 30 countries on six continents all over the world.
So you've been a busy boy.
Yeah.
your team's expanding. I remember when I did it, I think Louis hosted my five-day event. And again, what an absolute powerhouse Louis is.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I've read a couple of your books, Seven Stages of Money Maturity and also Lighting the Torch. I think out of the two of them, I preferred Lighting the Torch. Mm-hmm. And you're on today to talk about your new book, A Golden Civilization and the Maps of Mindfulness. So, yeah, over to you. What's the new book about?
Well, it's interesting, Andy. I didn't really enter the world of personal finance wanting to do that as a profession. I wanted to do something on the creative side, something on the spiritual side. I've written a book of poetry and photography. I've written a book on mindfulness. But it was, back in the old days, when at least in my old days, they used to say, do what you love and the money will follow. Well, I never found anybody who would pay me for one of my poems. And never found anybody who'd pay me for one of my meditations either. So I had to make a living, and I found personal finance to be easy and rewarding, particularly as we changed it and transformed it over time. But when the banking crisis hit about 10 years ago, I was profoundly disturbed. I was really upset because I'd felt that I'd put my whole career into making the profession more honorable, more honest, had to have more integrity in it. And here we found one act of malfeasance or fraud after another happening throughout the financial services industry. So I started the book way back then. And it started off being really rooted in personal finance and financial services. But as the decade unfolded, and we found the crisis in democracy that is now being felt in many parts of Europe and the UK and certainly in the US, and also questions about the sustainability of our industry on planet Earth, I realized that the book had to be something much larger. And what it really is that it's life planning civilization. It's taking civilization and creating a vision that we might all ascribe to, might all believe in, and or get passionate about. And then creating a vision so palpable and so powerful that that we then move quickly to make it happen rather than waiting kind of like cows for the slaughter or so, or like lemmings, just waiting with lethargy and resentment, blame, and complaint toward authorities. It strikes me that as a democracy, it's time we made the decisions and crafted the vision that we all can agree to. And it's quite astonishing to be doing this in the era of Trump and Brexit, where our two great cultures find themselves kind of split in two. But what we've been finding is that when we host conversations on a golden civilization, people come together. They all want the same thing. They want kindness. They want generosity. They want peace on earth. Wherever you go, they want the same thing.
And you mentioned that the book is maybe split into sort of three sections: life planning, mindfulness, and golden civilization. Do you want to sort of unpack each of those sections?
Yeah, something's extraordinary. I mean, your experience on the 5-day, I think, was similar to just about everyone's. People leave the 5-day, which is our training in life planning, our most profound training. It's the methodology is called EVOKE, E-V-O-K-E, which is an acronym, actually. But the people leave that life planning training absolutely inspired. And so in the life planning portion of this, one of the things that I've realized is that people get on fire and they do the things that they're really meant to do. And I know I've seen that in you, Andy, over the years, and seen how you've developed to be more and more who you are meant to be, and to be that person very strongly. We see that across the board in our clients. And I call that energy, that vitality that we see, entrepreneurial spirit or entrepreneurial endeavor. So one of the things that the life planning section talks about is how, if instead of having a focus largely on products, on financial products, we were to focus on the dreams of freedom that clients have, we would be delivering far more entrepreneurial energy into society than the government or corporations ever could by their fiscal or monetary policy. So one segment of the book is about integrity in finance, which partly means eliminating the product or diminishing the product focus. And then the other part involves inspiring people to live into their dream of freedom. The map of mindfulness is an interesting thing. There are many really unusual concepts in the book, dramatic reframing of how we think about civilization. Some of them, in regard to a golden civilization, we're used to thinking in terms of economics, Adam Smith's notion that everything's based on self-interest. But I look at a frame where instead we shift civilization to be based more on self-knowledge than on self-interest. And it turns out that when you make that shift, and I think that's a doable thing through a proper education, what happens is that a lot of the negative externalities that come up in a self-interest motivated society disappear. So for instance, distrust disappears, cynicism disappears, wars disappear, major pollution that challenges the earth disappears, autocracies disappear, dictatorships disappear. So these are things that can shift as we shift from self-interest, which is all about me in one way or another, and particularly a self-interest that is dominated by large institutions, by large corporations. So a golden civilization has very inventive ideas. Another one is that rather than focusing on money, we should be focusing on moments of freedom rather than moments of transaction in economics. We should be focusing on moments of freedom. And if we can learn to maximize, and again, these are things that can be done with technology and science the way it is right now. If we can seek to maximize moments of freedom rather than maximizing jobs or products as we do in our government measurement, society is going to be a lot more sustainable and a lot more dynamic and a lot more free. So those are some of the ideas in the Golden Civilization. And part of all of that is building a movement. So one of the reasons that I'm over in the UK right now is that I'm hosting half a dozen or so what we call Golden Civilization conversations all over the country, helping to stimulate those conversations being an ongoing experience. So what happens in those conversations is it's not my ideas, but the communities that I engage with, they come up with what is the vision, not me. And that's really proper. That's participative democracy. So one of the notions on all of this is the expansion of democracy and of democratic freedoms across civilization. And the third thing, the map of mindfulness, should I go there?
Yeah, definitely, definitely, definitely. Talk about mindfulness, sure.
So mindfulness is very interesting. I don't know if you've talked about it in your chats, in your podcasts, but mindfulness is a meditative practice there are many ways of doing it, but the primary way that is studied most often in scientific circles and that's practiced most is a meditative approach to meeting or experiencing the present moment or paying attention to the present moment. And usually it's done in a contemplative way by closing our eyes and observing sensations of the breath, either at the nostrils or at the belly. And most people do it, if they're dedicated to it, they'll do it 20 minutes or so a day. You can do it less and have some effect. I've done it much more than that. I've done it hours a day for almost 50 years. And the impact on my life is really extraordinary. And that impact is now being studied. One of the most interesting studies that I've seen, I think the most powerful dynamic study I've seen about mindfulness, was a study that actually wasn't talking about mindfulness at all. It was investigating happiness. And it was a study by Daniel Gilbert, who's a professor at Harvard and now has the most popular course, I think, for the last 15 years at Harvard. It's on happiness. So the study was by Daniel Gilbert and Matthew Killingsworth. And what they did was they created an app. You'd love this, Andy. They created an app, And what they did is they gave this app to thousands of people all over the world. And what the app did, you know, they're carrying their phone in their pocket or whatever, and the app periodically, randomly throughout the day would ping them. And in the moment that they were pinged, they had to go immediately to the app and answer three questions. So the three questions were, what are you doing? That's pretty easy. Second question, are you happy or unhappy? Pretty easy. And the third question was, are you focused on what you're doing, or are you distracted? And it was really interesting, because you'd think that if you're on the beach in Maui, that that's going to be a happier life than, you know, you've just gotten home from work, you've had to take out the garbage or do the dishes, and you're not very happy, right? You'd think that that would be the case. But it turns out there's no correlation around what you're doing. That the correlation with happiness is actually a correlation of, are you present? Are you focused? Are you here? Or are you not? And so the title of the study is A Wandering Mind is an Unhappy Mind.
Very interesting, very interesting. I'm going to stay on meditation for a moment. I think you were the first person I did meditate with. I can still hear your voice through guided meditation. I meditate every day now, every morning. Pretty much, I'm only at 10 minutes at the moment. So is the recommendation I need to increase this pretty soon?
I'll tell you, Andy, I mean, this is not everybody knows this, but I've meditated 2 to 3 hours a day throughout 50 years of my life.
What's the path to get there? As in, I'm going to go from 10 to 15 minutes now, probably, or 10 to 20. But what's the challenge for people that have dabbled in and out of it?
I think the great thing is to go on a retreat, frankly. Just like the 5-day transforms your life, and you know now that you will never not put your dream of freedom first. That's what the life planning experience tells you, and the 5-day tells you. In a similar way, doing a retreat where you spend a week or 9 days doing nothing but approaching the present moment again and again and again, you are so on fire, ethereal, so alert, so present, so clear at the end of that week, that you become aware just of the power of the experience, and you want it. You know, there are wonderful books, there's apps, there's I wrote a book on mindfulness called Transforming Suffering into Wisdom that I'm partial to. That's a good beginning book. So I don't know if that helps or if that's a bridge too far, but.
It's really interesting. The meditation retreat excites me, but also frightens me as well. So I think sure. I need to confront it. I'll start with a week, maybe. I'll update you with that. just moving on now to your famous three questions. So do you want to share with the audience what your famous three questions are? Because we can almost, you know, pretty much do it now, if that makes sense. It's as impactful listening to it via audio than another way. I know it would help being with, you know, a professional financial life planner, but let's just talk about the three questions that you're very famous for, which a lot of people quote you about these questions.
Fantastic. And let me also recommend the consumer website, which is lifeplanningforyou.com, which has these three questions embedded in it along with other approaches. But the three questions... Brilliant. Thank you. The three questions are what I'm probably best known for. because they work for most people to discover, reveal to themselves, and share with an advisor often what's most meaningful, what's most powerful, and what would really put them on fire in their life. And they go like this. So we ask them in order, because if you ask the third one, which is most personal, first, a client might buckle and say, no, that's too much. That's too personal. So we ask them first to just dream. You know, you wake up one morning and you discover you've got all the money you need. Maybe you won the lottery, all the money you need for the rest of your life. So what would you do? How would you live your life? You know, it's fun, and allow yourself 5 or 10 minutes to just play with that question before approaching the second question. And the second question goes deeper, and here you're going off to your doctor, your physician, and you are anticipating nothing. It's just a general, it's an annual checkup or so, but he or she has been doing tests. And when you arrive, you discover, they tell you that you have only 5 to 10 years left to live. You have a very rare ailment, and you'll be healthy, perfectly healthy, for those 5 to 10 years. You'll live 5, and sometime before the 10th year, without any notice, you're just going to keel over and die. So the question is, with time shortened like that, what would you do? How would you shift your life? What would change? What would become your focus? How would you live? And you can see immediately that things would shift from that lottery winning question. Often we shift more toward the people we love, but that's not true for everybody. What would it be like for you? So that's the second question. And you can see as well that we're moving through layers of meaning into deeper and deeper layers. So the third question starts with a similar scenario. You're going to the doctor again, and he or she's been running tests, but it's a different question. This time, your doctor completely stuns you with the information that you have already had an illness. You've been living with it unbeknownst to you, and it's come to term. You have at most 24 hours left to live. So the question is not, what would you do with your time? The question is reflecting on all the things you'd anticipated doing, the person you'd anticipated becoming. What did you not get to do? Who did you not get to be? What did you not get to do? Who did you not get to be? And so I think the three questions, they do two things. One is they recalibrate who we are, that we're not just self-interested going out after what we're greedy about or being fearful or anxious and responding to that and those urges, but rather it gives us a way of reflecting, which we rarely take time to do, on what is really meaningful, where our wisdom lies, where our self-knowledge lies, so that instead of being driven by self-interest, we are allowing our self-knowledge and our wisdom to guide us. And that has, when we realize that inside of ourselves, we become passionate and excited about it. When society realizes it, when civilization realizes it, then we've got a shot at sustainability. For our democracy, which is looking unsustainable now, for our planet, which some have questions about its sustainability, and for civilization as a whole, we need to bring that kind of wisdom and meaningfulness into society.
I see it as a bit of a split camp, because mindfulness is very, very current at the moment. There seems to be a big movement towards it. You know, mental health has been talked about a lot more freely. But then at the same time, we've got the rise of social media and all the other sort of negative forces. And so it's pretty tough for people to to find what's important to them. What's your thoughts on that sort of split camp?
Yeah, I think it's tough right now. I completely agree that civilization has been set up to not find it, which is one of the reasons that mental health is such an issue. We live in a profoundly inhumane structure where self-interest dominates. That's just not humane. And so it's no wonder that we have mental health problems. It's no wonder that I walk the streets of London on Friday evening and most evening, and I see people pouring out of bars with lots and lots of alcohol because it's a world that has a lot of unhappiness in it. So mindfulness cures that. But there are a lot of ways that we could be dealing with it. And I think we need a societal shift. And so there are two things that I'm doing about it. One is that this summer I am going to be launching a movement that brings life planning much more toward the middle class and working class communities so that it really seeps down into the large spectrum of humanity in our civilization and really all over the world. So I'm going to be gathering together leaders who are in life planning, who are really concerned about this and who can bring it to India, to the UK and to America, to our middle class and working class, to Africa. So that's one thing that I hope will help to make a difference. And certainly mindfulness is making a huge difference, will make a huge difference. It's just beginning. But if everybody is doing mindfulness, a lot will change. And then a third thing that we're doing that I'm also initiating right now here are these things that I'm calling Golden Civilization Conversations. And that has its own website. It's just called agoldencivilization.com. And those conversations are now happening. I think we've got them happening on 5 continents now in a very modest way, but still that's a remarkable fact. And there, the notion is rather than for us to feel powerless when things like Brexit or Trump or challenges to democratic freedoms begin to arise, we feel our oats. We feel the power that we have as citizens, and we claim that power, and we do it in a way that is joyful, respectful, exciting, even across politically devastating boundaries.
Some great insights there from you, my friend. I think the bulk of the interview's done. We'll now just talk about some general questions. I know you're a pretty deep and prolific reader. So, yeah, sort of favorite books or favorite genres or any books to recommend?
My favorite book right now is my own, A Golden Civilization. But the... And then another kind of smart ass, if you will allow me, response is the book of life itself, just being present every moment to what is happening and really experiencing it. But if I'm looking at reading, the book that I read that very few people are aware of, but I quote quite a bit in A Golden Civilization, was a book that of wisdom, a book of wise sayings written by a Chinese philosopher a couple of decades before Shakespeare. And he was a mix of Buddhist, Confucian, and Taoist. There are many different translations of it, and he goes by many different names, so that's a challenge. The book that I like the best is called, the version that I like the best is called Back to Beginnings. And they have it in a tiny book framework, so you can carry it in your pocket. Back to Beginnings. And the name of the man... this is a difficult one, is in this version is called Huanchu Daoren, and that's H-U-A-N-C-H-U, Huanchu Daoren, D-A-O-R-E-N.
I will try and find that and put a link in the show notes. This is one of the quick fire questions we ask, but technology you couldn't live without.
I'll give my crazy take on all of this. I think the only thing I couldn't live without is the breath. And that's a pretty extraordinary technology if you think about it. It begins right at the moment of birth. We don't have an experience of it before, which is an astonishing thing in and of itself. When you do your mindfulness meditation, you have all the body sensations that were there in the womb, but the breath just suddenly arises when you are born, and it's a shock, a recognition. And then we spend all this time as infants going back to it, returning to it, curious, what on earth is this thing? And learning from it. And we learn in those days how much comfort we take by returning to the breath again and again. And how much do we learn? And then we completely forget about it until, as you talked, you know, 8 or 9 years ago when you and I met, we come back to it in a mindfulness meditation. The most extraordinary technology I know is the breath, and the best thing to do with it is to pay attention to it.
That is a superb answer. What one money tip would you give to a group of children?
Ah, okay. It comes in two parts. So the first part is find what you really want to do in life. Find what you're really, really, really passionate about, what you really care about, what really makes you excited in life. And then when you find that, pour your heart into it, pour your energy and your time into it, and take enough time outside of that to think, how can I work with money to make this thing that I want to do in life happen in the most flourishing way I possibly can?
Any business people you sort of respect or look up to? You, Lucy, mentioned it before that there isn't any sort of figures of wisdom at the tops of powerful organizations, but is there anyone you can mention that is an example of this?
It's really sad. I, Andy, I mean, you know, we can talk about Warren Buffett, and you can talk about some of the things that a lot of the things that Steve Jobs stood for, and a number of figures you can name. Do I think that any of them are wise? No, I don't think there's a single person out there that I know or that I look to or that I see written about. And that, to me, is why how we will be seen 100 years from now as being really in a dark ages, even though you and I think, and we all think, my God, think about what's been happening over the last 250 years, how much freedom we've created in the world, how many extraordinary things. I think 100 years from now, we're going to be looked at as living in the dark ages because we've missed this piece of humanity. But I think it will develop through the mindfulness piece and through life planning.
But then historical figures that you would say qualify as wise?
Confucius. I think some of the
Stoics.
So absolutely. Marcus Aurelius, absolutely fabulous figure. And he was the richest man on earth as well. Wow. So that's a very unusual combination. I think that most of the religious figures that Christ and the Buddha and Muhammad and St. Francis, that, you know, what has happened to religion under them is institutional, hierarchical, and, you know, and often we, you know, like onward Christian soldiers, and we see terrorists and all this. So what's happened with religions is that they've become partial to their own, and then they're willing to become violent in one way or another. It's a terrible shame, but I think their teachers were wise.
It seems as if we reached peak wisdom with the Stoics. All roads lead back to them.
It's funny, you know, a lot of people that just think Stoicism is very harsh, but it's really not. It's just really being awake. It's very similar to mindfulness, very similar to a secular Buddhist kind of approach to things, and it's quite lovely.
Your thoughts, your thoughts and behavior—that's all you can control. You know, the rest is a distraction.
That's right. Yeah.
Very quick fire questions: is it about working hard or smart?
It's about being awake in the present moment, really being awake. It's about mastery of the present moment. If you master that, you master everything.
Wow. Lucky or good?
Same thing. Master the present moment and you've mastered everything.
you have to give an answer to this one, rich or wealthy?
Oh, come on. Well, one of the things I didn't say earlier is that one of the things that mindfulness does, it not only does it give us a mastery of the present moment, but there's a wonderful book called Altered Traits. It's written by the man who first wrote the book called Emotional Intelligence, Daniel Goleman, and was once the journalist of science for the New York Times for 6 years in the late 70s and early 80s. And that book looks at all the scientific studies of mindfulness and how the longer that you practice, the more hours you practice in a lifetime, the more traits inside of you, the more your character shifts. And how your character shifts is all good. It shifts toward generosity. It shifts toward kindness. It shifts toward awake. It shifts toward all the virtues you can imagine. It shifts toward courage. It shifts toward focus. And we know as well that it also adds longevity because it increases the length of your telomeres and all of that. So I would say the wealth of virtue is what is, and to be rich in virtue is what we want most. And that comes from cultivating the present moment.
Great answer. Thank you so much for your time, my friend. If there are any financial advisors listening, I seriously recommend checking out George's courses. Do you still do the 2-day course and the 5-day course?
I do.
Is it the same setup is what I mean? And it's all on the Kinder Institute, isn't it?
It's all on the kinderinstitute.com website. And I'm with Andy, and hugely, the 5-day don't hesitate, run. It will change your life. And in a way, you'll look back and you'll say, I wasted those last 2 years. I knew about it and I didn't go.
Exactly. I echo those words. And end consumers, they can go to, just a recap, of the same website again you mentioned earlier?
Yes. The end consumers can go to there's agoldencivilization.com, yep. And then there's lifeplanningforyou.com. But I want to welcome, and consumers can also take the 5-day and the 2-day. It's primarily for advisors, but you'll get life planned and you'll get life planning skills, and you'll learn coaching skills and counseling skills and skills in inner listening and mindfulness as well. So I wouldn't completely steer clear from them.
Yeah, no, I'd agree with that as well. As long as you're okay being around financial advisors for extended periods of time.
Yeah.
We're a good bunch. George, thanks for your time, mate, and hopefully I'll bump into you in London. Cheers, mate.
Bye-bye.